Starting with our first Masterclass live webinar on Thursday, March 14th, international angler and lock carb expert Mike Keady will be explaining early season buzzer tactics.
What's the setup? What flies to use? And how to maximize your catch rates? All of this and more, Mike Keady will be explaining.
Plus, he will then be answering your questions live during the webinar.
And if that's not enough, every attendee will get a copy of Mike's detailed notes and have exclusive access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And for all of this, tickets to the webinar are just €10. To attend, you must register and pay in advance by going to irelandonthefly.com/masterclass.
Some of you may recall the devastating fish kill that occurred last May on the Ballymacraven River in Ennistyne in County Clare. It is estimated there were in excess of 2,000 fish killed in this incident. This has culminated on February the 16th last in a case taken by the IFI for Ishka Aaron admitted liability for this, and indeed were fined a total of over €15,000. I got to talk to Jane Gilleran, who is an environmental fishery officer with the IFI and represented them in this case. I first asked Jane to tell us a little bit about the Ballymacraven River.
It's a tributary, so a river that joins into the Aina, which would be the bigger system there that people would be familiar with. If they know Ennistyne, they'd know the falls there in Ennistyne, just below the bridge to Lynch. So that's the Aina. And then the Ballymacraven joins it just down below the Falls Hotel. So some people might have done, there's a nice little river walk that the local community have kind of developed along the river there. So I think a lot of people locally would be familiar with it because they probably have walked down there, or they might have stayed in the Falls Hotel and have seen it. It's a lovely little kind of gorge river. So it runs through, it's kind of steep. And it comes down from Lickeen Lock. So Lickeen is the lake at the top of the system, and that's where the water basically originates from for the Ballymacraven.
Yeah, I actually do know it. It's actually beautiful around there. And I do know Lickeen Lock. I remember looking it up, and I think there are fish in Lickeen Lock as well.
Yeah, there's trout.
Yeah, trout in it.
Yeah, it's one of the sites for our, say, water framework directed monitoring. So and we do kind of, as part of our research program on the salmon, we do these surveys occasionally, looking for kind of numbers of juvenile salmon. So the Ballymacraven or the Aina system would be one of those. So yeah, you can see there's no salmon above it, but there are trout up there.
Right. Okay. So Jane, could you just tell us what actually happened with the incident?
Well, firstly, we got a call actually from a member of the public to one of our local staff. We have staff who work out of an office in Carfin. So they got a photograph of the river, like being a very kind of browny orange colour. And then when we got on site the next day, there had been a release of iron oxide, kind of a ferric sulfate solution from the water treatment plant on probably May the 2nd. And then that led to a fish kill then kind of about 48 hours later. So the fish, there was probably some fish killed initially. The ferric sulfate, or the sludge that would have come from the water treatment plant, is quite acidic in nature. So you probably would have some fish killed initially in the initial plume that came out of the water treatment plant. But most of the fatalities seem to be just a longer, slightly longer term kind of suffocation. So the sludge can deposit on the gills of the fish and kind of coat the gills of the fish, essentially blocking them. And they basically just suffocate. So we could, when we found a lot of dead fish, you could see the trout with their mouths open, you know, and usually that indicates that they're struggling to breathe. So that probably, we estimate maybe about 2,000 fish were killed. So everything basically below the water treatment plant in terms of fish life was wiped out. But in terms of like trying to put a definitive number on it, that's probably our best estimate, because you would have had like the trout and salmon that would have spawned last winter at that time of year aren't really up out of the gravels yet. Yes. So they could have, suffocated or just been coated in sediment in the gravels. And again, no oxygen and would have died there. So counting those is kind of impossible. But we had rudd, we had trout, we had salmon, and we had eels. Killed significant numbers of all of those.
Ferric oxide, you call it. Is that a byproduct?
Ferric sulfate. So it's a chemical that they use, and all water treatment plants use some type of chemical, and it's a coagulant. So when they take raw water, and the raw water comes in from Lickeen Lake, obviously it's you know, there's sediment in it, there's like humic, you know, there's sand, there's soil particles, there might be leaves, there's all these kind of things. So it's part of just the normal treatment process that these chemicals are used, and basically they make the sediment and the impurities kind of stick together,
right,
and make them heavier. And then when it goes into a settlement tank, it can kind of settle to the bottom of the tank. And then you have a kind of cleaner water up above, and then that goes forward to the next step of treatment, where it's just filtered before it ends up in your tap.
So basically what this does, it helps in making the sludge, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's where the sludge comes from. So the sludge then in a water treatment plant is ferric sulfate, and then it's all the soil and leaves or whatever other sediment or impurities that were in the water all mixed together essentially and have settled on the bottom of a settlement tank.
And is this how most water treatment plants would operate?
Yep. This would be kind of standard. Now, they might not all use ferric sulfate. Some might use aluminium sulfate, different kind of types of chemicals to perform the coagulant function. But essentially, yeah, they all work the same way.
And then what's done, because I was interested myself, I was just wondering what happens to the sludge then afterwards? Is it spread on land or what is it?
Well, the sludge in Ballymacraven is tankered away and it's brought into other plants with bigger capacity to treat it. So in the case of Ballymacraven, probably most of it goes into Limerick.
Right.
And then it's further treated there.
And then when it's further treated, what happens to it?
Some of it's land spread, but some of it can go to incineration. But basically, it's usually squeezed. So they try and get as much water out of it. Right. But yeah, definitely especially some of the wastewater treatments, sludges are land spread because they do have, you know, they have a lot of phosphorus and nitrogen in them. But this sludge tends to be a bit more acidic. So it can
not
be
as
reused
good for putting
sometimes.
On land. Yeah.
No, so it's probably mixed in with the other sludge and probably treated. And I'd say they just correct the pH of it and then.
So back to the actual incident itself. So IFI officers went to the scene, and how long did it take to find out what the cause of the problem was?
Oh, well, look, we knew pretty quickly what the cause was. But because until the proceedings are concluded in the court, it's sub judice, so we can't say. So obviously a lot of people were interested and wanted to know what happened. But because we don't want to prejudice the outcome of any court case, we really say very little until the court case is concluded. And we knew that because I did macroinvertebrate sampling. So I looked at the kind of small bugs, as you're all anglers, you know what we're talking about, and compared them above the treatment plant to below. So you could clearly see that when it came to macroinverts, there were less numbers and less diversity of macroinverts below the water treatment plant as above. We carried out electrofishing, so survey where we use electricity basically to kind of stun the fish. They swim towards our gear, and we can take them up, survey them, and then put them back alive in the water. So there was absolutely nothing alive below the water treatment plant, but a nice population of trout above it. And then right down at the bottom at the confluence with the Ina, you were starting to see one or two. I think we got a couple of rudd and a couple of trout, but, you know, fish will run ahead of a plume of pollution. So they probably ran ahead out into the Ina where it was a bit cleaner. And then as soon as, you know, the pollution kind of passed through, they would make their way back in. And then you would, because in May is the time of year that you have eels or the juveniles, the elvers, returning from the Sargasso, they're just coming in all the time. So there was a few, you know, there was glass eels already back in the bottom, of the Ballymacraven. But, you know, it was clear from looking at that, you know, that the point, the source point of the pollution had been the water treatment plant.
Yeah, it's obviously, when you say it there, is really evident. I noticed in the piece that I read that, like, there was a lot of salmon killed. I mean, that would have done untold damage to the salmon population on the river, wouldn't it?
Yeah, for the Ballymacraven, yeah. Because, you know, look, again, as all your listeners know, salmon really return to their natal river. You will get a certain amount of straying, but we probably lost three different age classes of salmon. So the only salmon that possibly weren't affected were if there were grilse or multi-sea winters out at sea that haven't come back yet. So you're probably going to have now this really depressed return of salmon for 3 years. And then maybe those two age classes that were at sea, they'll come back. And then another 3 years, you'll have very few salmon in the system. Again, over time, maybe with a small bit of straying, maybe salmon that were intended for the Ina might start to make their way up the Ballymacraven instead. But really, yeah, they'll be very, very slow to recover.
God, yeah. That's it. Just shows, really shows us how fragile an environment it can be for salmon.
Yeah, and how catastrophic, you know, one event can be in a small system. And that was something, you know, just another fish that is, you know, less well known, but possibly even in more serious status than the salmon is the European eel. Mm. You know, their populations have crashed even lower than salmon have crashed. And to see, you know, the numbers of eels that were in a small system like that, we were amazed at, you know, and you had elvers and you had everything up to like a 60 centimeter eel. Now the eels will live, you know, different amounts of time in different systems. In big lakes up the Shannon, they might stay up there for, you know, adult females could stay there for 50, 60 years. In a smaller system like the Mallee McRaven and Lickeen Loch, there's probably not as much food. They're probably not going to stay in as long, but still that fish could have been 18 years old, 20 years old, you know, and you had everything up to adults like that were killed. So that, you know, and as well as all the trout that were just wiped out.
Yeah, you know, leaving aside the trout, which in itself was tragic. The whole thing was tragic. And indeed, any fish kill is tragic.
Yeah, well, it's the worst one I've ever seen, by far. So they're never, it's never a phone call you want to get. Yeah, in my time in fisheries, that's the worst I've seen. Yeah, yeah.
You couldn't say much, sub judice and everything, but the case did go to court. And what happened at the court case?
Yeah, so it concluded there last Friday week, so the 16th of February. And prior to that, Ishke Aaron had pled guilty to two offences on May 2nd and May 18th. So really the court case was me giving evidence to allow the judge to impose a fine. So that was it. So I gave evidence and described, you know, the nature of the incident, the effects it would have had on the river. And then the judge kind of asked questions. And then also, you know, Ishke Aaron's barrister was there to you know, ask some questions as well. But really at that stage, once somebody's pled guilty, then it's really just essentially to outline the case to the judge so he can make a decision on the level of fine he wants to impose.
And I see he actually gave the maximum fine, which is 5,000, but there were two charges, were there?
Yeah, so as well as the offence that led to the fish kill on the 2nd of May, there was actually a second offence on the 18th of May. So there was another release of sludge or the ferric sulfate sludge to the river on May 18th. And so we got samples as well on that occasion. Now, while there wasn't a fish killed because essentially everything had already died previously, it's still a release of polluting matter, you know, and that's what the offence is, you know, to release polluting matter to a river. So we took two cases against Ishke Aaron, two separate cases for the two different offences. Our legislation, the maximum fine that's allowable under our legislation is €5,000. So the judge imposed a maximum fine of €5,000 for each of those offences. So that's why the fine was at 10,000.
Yeah, because there was two separate charges on that.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about it and mentioned there. I mean, 5,000 might seem like a lot of money, but really for something as catastrophic, and you use that word catastrophic, some groups could actually factor in that cost maybe for saving on runnings or whatever. I'm just saying, I'm not trying to be ultra cynical, but is there any scope for maybe the fine being increased or, you know,
well,
to
not
make it
at the
a
moment,
proper deterrent?
You know, yeah. It can be frustrating sometimes to see the levels of fines, but those are the fines that our legislation permits. So that's what the judge is allowed to impose. But to say that some places might factor it in, I'm not sure that will always happen, because if you have, you know, if you're, for instance, a construction company maybe, and you suddenly now have a fine for a water pollution offence, that can be detrimental in terms of you going for tenders, especially for government tenders or things like that. So if it's somebody in the farming community, water pollution offences, as well as maybe being subject to a court case by, you know, the local authority or by us for a water pollution offence, you can also lose percentages of your basic farm payment. And that would include like your basic farm payment plus any additional income, such as like an acre scheme or something. So you could be cynical and imagine that. And look, who am I to say maybe somebody would include that as the cost of doing business? But, you know, then there is the reputational damage as well, for an individual or a company to have their name in the paper as being a water polluter. So, you know, I don't know.
Actually, that's very true. And I hadn't really thought of that. It was very true, because I think as water quality becomes a bigger factor to all of us and we realize how important it is to us. Having that charge against you doesn't really look too good for you, particularly if you're a company in the public eye. Yeah. One other thing I was going to say there, we've had Mary Curry on before from the EPA, and I remember we've done a couple of articles on water pollution. So just want to reiterate as well, like the situation that happened in the Ballymacraven, how do people go about reporting it? If they're suspicious of something, if they see dead fish, how do they go about it?
Yeah, and actually, like, both of these incidents in the Ballymacraven came to us from members of the public. You know, as much as we are out and about, there's only, you know, there's a limited number of staff in IFI to cover the country. So we really do rely on people, you know, if they see something, phoning into us. So we do have a hotline number, and it's kind of manned 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And you can leave, you know, you can leave an anonymous complaint or an anonymous tip off. If you leave your name and address, we will, you know, come back to you. And it is useful, because sometimes maybe there isn't enough information in the complaint, and it is useful to have a phone number to ring back. You can leave a phone number and not leave a name, but that number is 0818-347424. So 0818-347424. But a lot of people, if you're in the angling community, you probably know, maybe you know your local, you know, fishery officer protection staff that are out in the ground. You might know the environmental officer, but you might also know the head office here, you know, Limerick, Macroom, it could be Chalkbrack in Galway, City West, you know, and those offices are manned kind of Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. So you can ring your local office as well. But if it's at the weekend or in the evening, then probably the 24-hour hotline number is the best way to pass on any information.
No, that's great. Yeah, well, actually, we'll put that number up accompanying when this is released. Another thing I want to ask you there. So Uisce Éireann, they're admitted culpability and everything, and they said that the plant wasn't fit for purpose.
Yeah, it's
dealing with.
I mean, in fairness to Uisce Éireann, they've inherited a lot of infrastructure around the country that's aging, and that's been subject to underinvestment. You know, this plant's operating, I think, 50-55% above capacity.
Right.
Now, and it is undergoing quite a significant kind of investment at the moment. So they have almost completed, I think, say, the drinking water, the filtration side of it. And as soon as that portion is completed, then they're going to just run straight into increasing the sediment storage capacity and the sludge storage capacity. So hopefully, once all that's completed, you know, this should never happen again at that particular plant. That's the good news story at the end of this, that really this hopefully is solved now for future.
Good. It's really good to hear. I mean, I know the whole thing was a tragic case, but it's good to see this outcome out of it. And also as well, that maybe for other plants that maybe are aging and going beyond capacity, that this would hopefully speed up work that's going to get done on them to bring them up to speed.
Hopefully. But I guess, look, there's only so much money to go around. And I guess Uisce Éireann are probably operating on it. You know, they have to prioritize where they're spending their money. So, you know, this thankfully has been completed. But there are other plants around the country that do need investment. And hopefully that will start to filter through now.
Yeah, hopefully. So listen, Jane, that's absolutely fantastic. And I'd like to say fair play to you for the work you did on this. It's fantastic. And as I said, I know that the case was tragic, but really was, and as you say, catastrophic. But it's good to see an outcome coming out of it where, you know, should we say the people at fault were found guilty and fined. And, you know, hopefully this would go around to everybody else around the country that, you know, you won't get away with water pollution.
Hopefully, you know, and that's really the thing, is if people see something, if they're worried about something or they have any suspicions or knowledge of a pollution source, to try and speak to us or your local authority, you know, but try and let somebody in charge know. And we will do our best to investigate and try and bring whoever is responsible to, you know, to justice.
Jane, thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Our thanks to Jane Gilleran for joining us on the show. Don't forget to rate, review and follow the Ireland on the Fly podcast on Apple, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Plus, you can keep up to date on IrelandOnTheFly.com as well as on Instagram. And myself and Tom will be back with another episode about the people and places of fly fishing in Ireland.
Starting with our first Masterclass live webinar on Thursday, March 14th, international angler and Loch Carb expert Mike Keady will be explaining early season buzzer tactics.
What's the setup? What flies to use? And how to maximize your catch rates? All of this and more, Mike Keady will be explaining.
Plus, he will then be answering your questions live during the webinar.
And if that's not enough, every attendee will get a copy of Mike's detailed notes and have exclusive access to the recording of the webinar afterwards.
And for all of this, tickets to the webinar are just €10. To attend, you must register and pay in advance by going to IrelandOnTheFly.com/masterclass.